Hello.
Hi.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
We are here in Vienna, or a bit outside of Vienna, on the countryside. You're from New York, with Italian roots.
And yeah.
So why Vienna?
Why Vienna? That's a good question. I was in Rome, and I fell in love with a girl who was from Vienna. And I came to Vienna, and then it didn't work out, so I stayed in Vienna without the girl.
Okay. But you like it here in Vienna, because it's
yes.
very different.
I like it in Europe. Vienna is one of the many nice places in Europe. But I like to be in Europe. I like to be a couple of hours away from all the important places in my life, like Rome, Paris, and other places. To live in New York is nice, but there's no place to go from New York. You have to travel hours and hours by plane to get to another interesting place.
That's true, yeah.
Europe has everything in it.
And you are currently working on a movie
mm-hmm.
about the Saint Edith Piaf. No, not Edith Piaf. So
Stein.
I try again. So for film, you are currently working on a movie
mm-hmm.
About the Saint Edith Stein.
Yeah.
A woman who did a lot good during her lifetime or in
yes.
her lifetime. She fought for women or against anti-Semitism. And how about you? What do you stand up for?
I think with what's happening now in the world, especially with things that are happening within the film business, we have to stand up for, above all, the dignity of women. And especially men have to do that, because it is men that have to defend how they treat women and change whatever aspect they may have or opinion they may have of the position of the woman in today's society. That we are, as I put in Edith, that we are, we're equal in our rights, but we're different in our functions. But we have to respect one another, and it all has to be done in an atmosphere of dignity and respect. And no one is in the function of another person. In life generally, no one is in the function of someone else. If I'm writing a play, for instance, or a movie, and I have a character whose purpose in the movie or the play is to be in function of another character, then I have to eliminate that character, because they have to have their own dignity, their own place. So, and above all, I think we have to fight very much for the equality of people, to look upon ourselves as one human race, and no longer different races or different things. And terrible men like Donald Trump are dividing the world. And they divide it because that's the only way they can conquer it. They can't conquer it with their intelligence, because he's an idiot. They can't conquer it with their heart or with their soul, because I don't know if they have one. So they divide. As we know from the way the Romans fought wars, to divide and conquer. So once you want to unite people, you have to have the intelligence and also the strength of character to be able to lead people that see themselves as one. We all come from one place, which is Africa. So we all are one people.
Talking about Africa, you worked a lot all over the world. In India with Mother Teresa, and as well in different places in Africa.
Yeah.
What inspired you to do so?
I worked in Africa because they asked me to write Shaka Zulu. So my inspiration at the beginning in Africa was to make money and live, because I had to work. And I was given this wonderful opportunity to write a movie on Shaka Zulu, and I did that. And while I was there, I learned a lot about Africa, and I became very much a part of the African experience. Since we all come from Africa, when we go back to Africa, the mal d'Afrique is our understanding that is our mother. And the Rift Valley, South Africa, all that is where we come from, in two big waves, as you know, 200,000 years ago, 50,000 years ago. And we can identify ourselves as African. The only difference between an African and us is the fact that if you're in the sun a lot, your skin gets darker because you have more melanin. If you're in the sun a lot, your body changes a little bit to adapt to the environment, but we're all the same.
So, and what did you get back working there and helping the people there as well?
You learn a lot about yourself, about whether you really care about other people or whether you just say you care. It's very easy for people to go all the way to Africa to help children who are hungry, but it's more difficult for them to go next door to the family next door and see what's wrong with them. I think what we have to start to do is not so much travel to the other end of the world, but to travel next door or to the people down the street who need us.
And what did you learn about yourself?
I learned that I'm not as strong as I thought I was. I'm an idealist, but I'm not as consequent as I thought I was. And when I was confronted with people who are really, really, really devoted, like Mother Teresa and others, I realized that I was not on their level, and I had to rise to that level if I wanted to be like them. But it's impossible to be like them. At one stage in my life, I wanted to be another Albert Schweitzer. But that's ridiculous, because I'm not. So I learned above all my limitations, what I can do, what I can't do, and how that can work into my relationship with society.
And you are as well a medical doctor.
Yeah.
I'm specializing on tropical diseases.
Yeah.
You studied theology, and philosophy.
Philosophy, yeah.
So you have traveled a lot all over the world. You have seen a lot of things. What would you say is the most important need of us humans in the world?
Most important need?
Yeah.
Love.
Love.
That's all. The beginning and the end of who we are is love.
Yeah.
You either have it or you don't. For yourself and for others. And the most important process we go through in life is understanding that we have to love ourselves in order to love others, and we have to love ourselves in order to be loved. It's more difficult to be loved than to love, just like it's more difficult to receive than it is to give. And if you have that, I mean, everybody says it, you know, the Beatles, everybody says love, but love has become a cliche. But the depth of love is something where you really do care what happens to the other person. You become the other person. That's empathy. You don't just... The difference between compassion and empathy is compassion is aristocratic. That is, you look upon the poor bum in the street and you say, oh, the poor man, let me help him, and you give him money. That's compassion. And it's aristocratic because you're better than the other person. Empathy is democratic. That is, instead of saying, I will give you something, I will sit with you. I will live your life. I will include you in my life. And that's what we don't do. We go to places like Madonna gets 16 children from Mali or whatever we do. That's aristocratic. We give to other people. We say, look, I am such a great person. I'm going to give you some money, or I'm going to give you some of my food or whatever we do in Europe. But we never become the other person. We never understand what it's like to be hungry or to be poor or to be a refugee. We don't understand that. That's why we will never be able to deal with them. So true love is to become the other person. That's empathy.
So would you say that your very personal definition of the good is empathy and real love?
First of all, the good has to be objective, not subjective. We can't say my good is not the same as your good. Because when we start to say good is subjective, then we lose all track of morality. Because I can say this is good for me, but it doesn't have to necessarily be good for you. We have to say, is it good or isn't it good? If it's good, it has to be objectively good, which means it has to correspond to certain rules that are universal in our society. I can't have my rules and you have your rules, or else we'll never get along. We have to have rules that we both agree on. That's why we have laws, and that's why we have judges, and that's why we have courts of law. But those are human. And another human being can never tell you if you're right or wrong. We need to appeal to something greater. This was Jean-Jacques Rousseau, so many of the great philosophers. Unless we have a metaphysical dimension of good, our good will never make sense because we'll be able to change it. You know that if you get into a situation that's desperate for you, you'll even change your definition of good or right or wrong, and just to suit what you're living through. If you work for somebody who's very, very honest, right? You say, this guy's great. If his son is sick and he desperately needs the money to save the life of his son, he will steal from you 80% of the time. Not because he's not good, but because he needs the money for his son. Because the love for his son is greater than his understanding of what it means to steal. Most people who do bad things in life do them for reasons that appear to be good, justified. I've worked in certain prisons. If you go to a prison, you talk to the people in prison, and you talk to criminals. Why did you kill? Oh, you don't know what she was like. She drove me crazy every day. They have their own justification because they have their subjective understanding of good. But if you have an objective understanding of good, it is the only one that really works.
Did your definition of good changes within the years?
Yeah, of course, it always changes. As you grow into society, as you grow into people, the understanding of good changes with your understanding of empathy. In other words, the more you understand people and the more you get close to people and the more you see how many mistakes you make in life and everything else, the more you understand what the objective good is. We have natural law, and natural law is more important than human law, let's call it, or civil law. We understand, if you see children playing, two-year-old, three-year-old, four-year-old, one child will say, yesterday I gave you my apple, so please today you have to give me your apple. That's law. But nobody taught them that. It's in them. And we lose that as we grow older. So that's the best thing would be to return to understanding of good that children have. Children know what's good. If you look at a child, really look at a child in the eyes of a child, you see everything and you see how much we've lost. It's paradise lost, our paradise lost. So we should go back to thinking as children. It's hard to do that, but that means to find an innocence which we as a society have lost.
Have you ever been put into a situation where you had to change your definition of good or experienced anything, any situation?
Yeah, there are times when I don't change my definition of good, I change the way I express it. When you feel threatened by people, you have to defend yourself. And to defend yourself, you have to decide whether your own existence is more important than the overall existence of your concept of good. I'll give you an example. When I did Shaka Zulu, I became a member of the African National Congress. By doing that, I lost 8% of the income from my film, which Shaka Zulu, which was millions of dollars. Really millions, and I was 20 at the time. So millions of dollars when you're 20 is a big thing. I had to decide whether I was going to leave the African National Congress, which was fighting for the rights of black people in Africa, and get my money, or not leave it, and sign that I would never return to South Africa until apartheid was abolished and lose the money. I chose, in my idealism, to leave the money and remain faithful to the African. I don't know if that was the right thing or not, but that was a situation where I was confronted in my life with a choice. Do you do what's right or you do what's good for you and money? And I chose what's right because I thought that was the best thing to do. I don't know if I would do that all the time, but I did it then. And I've never regretted it.
So you say that you never regretted it. Do you in your daily routine, your life, are afraid or have ever been afraid of failure?
Yes, all the time. Of course. I'm afraid of failure every morning when I get up.
And how that you reach what you did, or, yeah.
Yeah, but
how do you handle this?
Success is not decided by society. The people who get Oscars or who get prizes and who go around to all these meetings and everybody sits around and they on the stage and they applaud and they give them a statue or they give them something or they give them a piece of paper. This is all illusion. It's BS. Success is decided only by what you feel in your own heart and your relationship with God. Everything else is man. And man doesn't know. Do you think they know if I'm good or bad? Do you think people who give me something realize that I appreciate it or not? You know how many idiots get Oscars? You know how many stupid people get Nobel Prizes? All the time. But they get it because it seems like it's a nice thing, or they have a meeting, people like to get together and give each other prizes. But success is whether you have achieved your purpose for being alive and whether in the end you're going to be able to say on your deathbed, as you're dying, I have done something that has advanced the cause of love among people. If you have not done that, it doesn't matter how much money you have. There's a comedian called W.C. Fields, very famous comedian from the 20s, big nose. On his deathbed, he had all his family around, and he took his money and tore it up in front of everybody, just tore it up, because it means nothing. So it's not how much money you make, it's not how much power you have in society, because people with power usually are crazy. It's not how much, the first three chakras of the Kundalini Yoga, right? Wealth, power, and sex. Our society today judges people by how wealthy they are, how sexy they are, or how much power they have. They don't reach the heart chakra, which is here, right? Which is the fourth chakra. And so if our society measures success by wealth, power, and sex, then you'll never be successful if you're human. You'll never be successful if you're honest. Because who wants to live for power? Who wants to live for wealth? Who wants to live only for sex? Is that why we're here? Dante says in the Divine Comedy, we were not created to be brutes. An orangutan lives for wealth, power, and sex. A gorilla lives for wealth, power, and sex. Although some very good gorillas around. But we're human. And so wealth, power, and sex is something we have to get past.
What do you live for?
I live only to be able to express something. I'm happy. I'm happiest when I can actually say something successfully that's in my heart. As a writer, I really get a high out of writing something I know is good and says what I feel. That for me is more important than anything else. And the reason I have all these books is because these are all people who were trying to say something. Some said it, some didn't say it. But they were trying to express themselves.
I think that is a very, very beautiful closing. Thank you very much.